Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast for Saturday, June 20th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch. On with me is Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
I feel like I'm driving down the road in my new Chevrolet.
And Graham Thickens is fooling around doing something this day.
Are there holes in the side of your Chevrolet?
That music was just very tinkly.
Wasn't that
very
tinkly?
And fins on the back.
And yes. Fins on the back.
I chose tinkly music on purpose.
Why did you choose tinkly music?
Because I'm in a tinkly mood.
Okay. That's well, we can wait for you if you really need to go.
You are so bad. We were talking about stuff at the beginning here before we actually started, and talking about Bing the search engine and all kinds of stuff, but
none of us really use it.
Yeah. And then talked about Steve Jobs' liver transplant, because that just hit this morning. And you're right, Tim, it's all over tech meme. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, it's a big story.
It's somewhat
surprising. I mean, it's kind of a radical treatment for his pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the doctor quote in the Wall Street Journal piece said that it's 75% of the time that cancer metastasizes to the liver. So it is that would be a logical place where you would have to treat. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, usually pancreatic cancer is just a death sentence. I mean, you've got to be amazed at how well he's handling and treating it. Because usually it really is. I mean, it's one of the most aggressive forms of cancer.
Well, the one thing about him is, you know, he's made it crystal clear over and over and over again that he's not Apple, that it's the people. And the Journal made it very clear that Tim Cook is number two, who, you know, is kind of the man behind he's Mr. Inside, is going to take over more responsibility. But obviously he's been doing that anyway, for several years, and they seem to be doing really well. So,
yeah, I think that there is this impression that even though Jobs was out for the last 6-7 months, that he was still sort of behind the scenes and very heavily involved. But if he had a liver transplant 2 months ago, at least for the last couple of months, he hasn't really been involved at all, I would think.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that, you know, just like Gates at Microsoft being someone that was the soul, kind of the heart and soul of the company, was the same thing with Jobs. And when I joined Apple back in 97, after he came back in 96, there were people that were telling me stories about how he brought in all the product managers. And, you know, so like the product manager for printers came in and said, why are we in this business? I mean, who makes that printer? Hewlett Packard. Why are we not just partnering with Hewlett Packard? Why do we have to have an Apple label on that? It makes no sense. We're no longer in that business. You know, and then the Newton people come in. He takes the Newton, and this is probably apocryphal, but he throws it down on the floor and says, this is a piece of shit. We're out of this business. But he basically cut all the things that were not core to the company. And so, you know, clearly he's set direction, and, you know, he doesn't have to be there 40 hours a week or 80 hours a week to do that. And so it's been clear that, you know, that he's been briefed, at least that's what they say anyway, all the way along. But
you could argue that Apple, especially during the early to mid 90s, kind of went got off the rails because of this corporate culture that grew up. And just like in any other big company, all sorts of decisions are made at very different, you know, different levels, and nothing's coordinated. And what he'd brought is this very laser beam focus and made some hard decisions on what to do and what not to do. And that's really behind their success, is that those tough decisions have been made.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of companies that have that sort of discipline, I guess, where those kinds of things happen.
Well, my wife, who is clearly, we're both fairly major shareholders in Apple, so we care what happens with the company. And this morning when I was mentioning that to her as we were walking the dog, I said, hey, look, it's in the Wall Street Journal. She said, let's say a prayer for him. You know, I wish him well. Maybe we should send him a note. I mean, that's kind of her reaction. You know, it's not, oh my God, what does this mean to the future of the company? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this would make a good, Go ahead.
Yeah, get well, Steve.
Yeah, no kidding. he does listen to the podcast.
Oh, you never know. Yeah. You know?
That's right. That's a good segue into the iPhone 3GS, which, by the way,
it is Steve Jobs' liver into a
Apple 3GS. Into Apple. Come on.
Oh, it is an Apple.
Is there a new transplant app?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like we need to talk about the iPhone or the iPhone 3GS, except from this standpoint, we have iPhone app developers here in Minnesota, and Dan Grigsby running Mobile Orchard. And so there's a fair amount of critical mass already here for a state our size. But the thing that strikes me is there are several sites where you can sell your existing 3G iPhone. And this one guy I know got $280 for his, and I went on last night and found several places where I could sell it for $240 or $250, meaning I could go buy a new one, a new 32 gig for just a small delta. And I'm really seriously toying with that idea because this one I've got is perfect. But that just shows the secondary market.
You'd think that the secondary market would get closer to the $99 price point, but I guess it's because you have to spend $80 a month for the service.
Yeah. And I think people can jailbreak them. Well, absolutely. Well, let me tell you also that, and of course, AT&T is either going to crush this or figure something out, but Crunch Gear had an article about tethering, and I did it last night. And I also did it to my wife's, set my wife's iPhone up with it. And it is so brain dead simple and seamless and easy to be able to tether, and amazingly fast. I was getting consistently about 1.5 megabit per second down, and it was slow going up about 180 to 200 kilobits. But it is the simplest thing I ever did compared to my Trio 750, for instance. So, it's pretty.
Is that on a regular 3G or is that the 3GS?
No, regular 3G.
You did the tethering. I saw a story the other day about that there was going to be some expensive plan that you'd had to be on for that to work on AT&T.
$55, but then they came out and said, no, we're not doing that. They drew an analogy between what could be and what already is with the BlackBerry service, which is a $20 delta if you want to have unlimited data. If you want to have 5 gigs. Tethered.
So they're even though they're in their quote unlimited plans are really not they're really
metered. They're not really unlimited.
No,
they have a bandwidth cap.
What do you?
That's outrageous. I mean, there should not be any bandwidth caps. That is completely outrageous. Because I thought it was unlimited. I've got on T-Mobile. I've got unlimited. Now you're telling me that it's there's a bandwidth cap.
I hate to break some bad news to you, Tim, but. Yeah, I think there is. Yeah, nobody reads terms of service. And I try to wade through them, and I keep most of them. I mean, I cut and paste and save them in a folder. I know I'm a little anal about that, but there's now a site.
You cut and paste terms of service?
Yeah, I keep them. Absolutely. Now there's a site that does an A-B comparison between terms of service. In fact, I should put that in the show notes, where they will go in and you can just sort of keep track of what the changes have been in terms of service.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, so Steve, are you going to get a GS or are you going to stay on your 3G?
If I can sell it for, $250 or something, or $230 or $250, I'll dump it.
So are you still under contract or are you off contract?
Well, I'm still on contract, but it says that that on the site that I can upgrade. I'm approved for upgrading.
Because you're a current customer, though, you don't get the same subsidy that if I switched from T-Mobile over, I would get. So how much do you have to pay for the phone?
Actually, that's not true. For a limited period of time, AT&T is waiving it so you can actually upgrade at the upgrade price, so I could go in and buy the 32 gig at $299.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's good.
Did you see the Anantech comparison with the Pre that they did?
Yeah, it wasn't very favorable, was it?
Well, they basically, from a speed perspective, it's a lot faster. It says it's 54% faster than the 3G and 11% faster than the Pre. So it was an interesting side-by-side, you know, kind of benchmark. And they also threw in the T-Mobile G1 just for laughs, too, which is basically for laughs because it really doesn't compare to the other two at all. From a hardware perspective, it's significantly slower.
Are any of our local developers doing pre-apps? Do you know, guys? Have you talked to anybody?
I haven't talked to anybody, but I don't think that anyone can do pre-apps because the SDK has not been published yet, and it won't come out until later this summer. So I would think that they would wait until that's out and then take a look at it and see how easy or difficult it is to develop for it.
Well, you know, it was kind of fun to see. I was flipping through looking for some pre-information today, and one of the blogs was the top 8 apps for pre, and it was like, they can't have much more than 10.
So, yeah, I think there's under 20 right now. I think it launched with something like 15 apps. So, yeah. But no one has the SDK, so I mean, that's sort of a not a good comparison. And remember, it took a year before Apple did anything. So to have even 20 apps at launch is still pretty good. So, Phil, are you going to still get one of these things? Or are you still?
Oh, I cooled on it. And, I'm probably in that situation of waiting to decide, trying to decide if I'm just going to switch over and get an iPhone. So,
I finally decided I'm going to get an iPhone. I'm not sure exactly what direction I'm going to go in. But
it was Steve's use of iMic that put you over the edge, right?
Tweet mic.
Yeah. No, it wasn't quite that. It's just it's such a robust development platform, and there's some things I'm working on in my day job that mean that I really need access to it to get some projects done. So
cool.
So I'm not sure if I'm going to get an old one and use it on T-Mobile, or if I'm going to get a new one and switch to AT&T. Well, we'll find out in the next month or two. So. I just kind of want to see how this thing shakes out with the aftermarket first.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened here locally in Interactive. We had MEMA last Wednesday. That was an interesting, I know you guys weren't able to make the scene, but it was a very, very interesting presenter this week. Simple Scott, who was the design lead for Obama's online initiative, was very interesting. Very interesting. So.
So did he talk about how they kind of changed midstream on that?
Yep. Talked a lot about it. It was really kind of fun. He showed a series of slides of the actual website changing. You know, one of his comments was that it was constantly changing, that they were writing code, and when they hit save, it was live. So it was an ongoing process and ever evolving. He gave everybody a layout of you know, the offices of, you know, what offices and what areas were responsible for what things. And it was interesting to see the inner workings of something that was so aggressively pursued by a candidate.
So did you get any insights about how to, you know, use social media differently from the talk?
No, I don't think so. I think it just highlighted the fact that it's so fluid. You know, social media is such a fluid, moving thing. He very much talked about, you know, core principles and maintaining look and feel across everything, and then developing things that were needed in different states, battleground states, you know, developed, you know, voter registration campaigns that were more aggressive than we may have seen here. And it was a very insightful sort of a thing. And it really... Scott was very much reflective of what, the Obama campaign always postured themselves. You know, he's got a great passion. He's idealistic. He's got a real drive to get the message out.
So did they talk about kind of why social media became such a big component of the campaign, Phil?
You know, I didn't really know that it was addressed. I didn't really hear it. I mean, I think it was more of a given is that social media is a big part of the campaign. And, you know, that's really where the whole, you know, sort of tour of the history of their site design and their initiatives came. So they didn't really talk about why it became such front and center, other than the given assumption that, you know, it's the place to be. It's the way to talk to especially younger voters, but it's the way the world is moving. So
had any of these guys worked with either John Dean or with John Edwards in the previous campaigns where they started to use it?
No, Scott didn't really talk about any particular other people or any other personalities on the team. He was really just kind of explaining the whole process and where it went.
Okay.
It was good. It was well done, I thought. So great site, too. I'd never been to the, what is that, the, what is that pavilion on Nicollet Island? I'm drawing a blank now, but that was a great little.
Was it at the Nicollet Island Inn?
No, right next to that. There's the big pavilion next to that.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
Did he talk about, because one of the things that amazed me when I started to dig into how they did the social media campaign and looked at the fact that they had presence on social media networking sites like Black Planet and Faith Base and Eons, which is kind of a new age one, Asian Avenue. I mean, they were in places where essentially the entire base was hanging out.
And yeah, he didn't really necessarily talk about the strategy beyond design.
Okay.
He was the designer of all the stuff, you know, lead designer on the, you know, the stuff that they built.
Yeah. Fascinating. But
incredible.
Obviously it worked.
Yeah, it did. It worked very well. And it was, I really enjoyed it. That's, I don't know, great. If Graham would have enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Was he involved at all in the creation of the iPhone app and the design of that? And
He didn't talk about that, no.
Okay.
I think we spent a lot, most of the stuff he talked about was online development and, you know, website and online campaigns and things like that. And doing things for individual states. You kind of get locked up in the fact that, you know, here we are in our state and we see one point of the campaign, and if you're in another state, the thrust of a campaign can be completely different. So in battleground states, it was not only important to get the message out there, but it was also important to get voters out and get voters registered. And he showed some very innovative stuff as far as you know, voter registration. It was really interesting to see. But he said you probably didn't see it here because this wasn't a battleground state.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, that was really good. Did anybody hear any more? Graham alluded to in an email earlier this week something he'd heard about fan chatter. Did you guys find any more about that?
No.
No.
Something about fan chatter was moving out to the valley to really build out. I can't remember that. But it was a nice little rumor. I think good best of luck to them. Good guys over there.
Yeah, if that's true, though, why can't you stay here? Why do you have to move out to California?
I don't know why that was.
Well, you know, there's a lot of venture capitalists that do, in fact, want people to be out there. Because I've heard that from a couple of different people who have ended up being tugged and saying, you know, yeah, we'll invest in you, but you got to move your company out here, mainly because we can get you the talent that you need. Mm. You know, so that's kind of the flip side. The other thing is that, you know, I'm not able to disclose it yet, but there's one startup that is probably not going to keep going for much longer. And then there's another one that may be in play. And I know I'm being a little coy here, but I'm not going to, I'm not going to breach any confidence.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Could be. But
so is it a economy related kind of a thing?
It's just a matter of, I mean, well, the answer would be yes and no. I think, and here's why I brought it up. I brought it up because in both cases, it's really related to selling. It's really related to getting, not just getting the word out from a marketing perspective, but getting, you know, being able to actually close deals and upsell people and so forth. And I've just been really becoming more and more aware as the weeks go by that the number one issue that most startups face is they can't sell. They don't have anybody to sell their stuff. So it's all about building buzz and doing marketing and getting the word out so people come and they self sign up and that's really the driver and the direction. But for the most part, they can't even afford inside salespeople. So that's one of the last things that happens. Mm. And I'm just wondering what you guys' thought is on that with respect to selling.
How can you argue with it? I mean, you're right. You can get only so far with whatever product you're developing or dealing with without having to get out there and sell it. It's always tough to do because you not only do you have to build awareness, so when you talk to a seller or to a buyer, they don't have to go, "What? What's that?" You want to build some awareness,
right.
But you have to get out there and say, "All right, I need money to keep this going, so you have to buy it." So I think it's a common problem for sure. You know, and the classic problem with any startup is running out of money, and if you can't get customers, you're going to run out of money.
Right. Right.
Well, building awareness is a big enough problem as it is, and I think a lot of startups they get their product done, and they especially these Web 2.0, services, and then they don't necessarily invest the same amount of time, energy, money into trying to get the word out. You know, so mm-hmm. it's not just getting that story on TechCrunch that will get some awareness or Mashable or whatever. It's you've got to do a lot more than that.
Well, I've talked about that to a couple of different folks, and in fact, getting on TechCrunch or Gizmodo or Mashable or whatever is probably the easiest thing you're mm-hmm. going to have to do. The toughest thing is getting in front of the customer. It's not as difficult to get in front of your peers. It's much more difficult to get in front of potential customers.
Right. Well, and it's a matter of if you're on major sites like that, you're going to get a bubble and then it's going to go away.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to hit for a while and that's the end of it. So mm-hmm. if you can't build a sustainable model, then you've got issues.
Got to get your customers. Got to serve your customers.
There's a guy named Jack Denute. I don't know if you've heard of Jack. Graham and I got together with him. He's US born, actually from Maple Grove. And went over and lived in Europe and met and married a woman in the Czech Republic. Had I think two kids, and he's got a startup. But he was also the guy that ran TechCrunch over there in Czech in the Czech Republic, and ended up doing a lot of different things. And one of the things that he talked about was whenever he was on or whenever something would happen, and he would have front and center on TechCrunch that he'd get this huge spike and then it would go away. I mean, he had about a 2 or 3 week delta. And one of the reasons that he loved Amazon Web Services is it was extremely simple for him to provision for this anticipated load and then essentially deprovision, just back off from that to keep his costs under control. And he was able to handle whatever load was thrown at him. It didn't happen dynamically. He had to physically do it, but it was real easy to do, just toggling a couple of things on his back end admin. But to the point, you get all this attention and buzz and you're top of mind for a day or two in somebody's mind, and then that's it.
If you can be top of mind for a day or two, sometimes you can't even be top of mind for the day.
Right.
But I think our original discussion about the iPhone and the Palm Pre, this is a very good example of being top of mind for a very short period of time.
Yep.
And Palm Pre had to deal with that because of Apple's dominance in the space. But let me ask you something, Steve.
Yep.
You've used the word Delta about 5 times today.
Yeah.
Is that on your word of the day calendar?
I can put it on there. No, that's the difference between one level and another level.
Okay.
It's the delta in between.
You know what the word for tomorrow is?
What?
Gamma.
You guys. I try so hard to be a nice guy, and I'm just teased constantly.
You know, your problem is you're just so damn smart.
We'll get to Epsilon later in the week.
Oh, God. All right, the dictionary
it's
on
Greek Mac OS. Sesame Street. Today's
word of the day.
Brought to you by Delta.
Can I tell you something? Bert and Ernie. We had an Ernie doll that was our kids. It's first my daughter's and then my son's. And we put it in the garage sale. We had a garage sale a week ago. And he had a little tear on his arm and all that. And he's little worse for the wear. And I said to my wife, what should we do with him? She goes, you know, let's just throw him away. I said, okay. So I tossed him in the trash. And I realized what a huge missed opportunity that was, because I could have burned them. I could have set them in the street and turned them, you know, brought a nice video camera out there and poured gasoline on them or something. Well, I could have had an event, you know.
Yeah, it could have been your viral video.
Yeah, bring all the kids in the neighborhood over. Hey, kids, let's burn Ernie.
Man.
I know, I'm just...
Yeah, then, like, in, you know, 15 years later, all these kids... This old man burned Ernie in the middle of the street.
That's right.
I was very sad.
I could hear the screams of Ernie for years.
Yeah, well, I know. Speaking of effective parenting...
Yeah, there's a social media breakfast coming out.
Yeah, there is. Let's do that. Steve's presenting at SMB, a sold out event. I understand. Did they go through the second batch of 50 tickets?
It's sold out. Yeah. Well, Rick called Deluxe and partner up and asked if they could get a bigger area, and they're going and renting one of those outdoor tents to hold everybody. Now, hopefully, I've been in those before. Unless you have fans who, if it's hot, it's going to get ugly in there. But if it rains or something, they've got a place inside where it would work. But Tim Brunell is going to speak about social media's impact on advertising and marketing. And I'm going to do it on what we've talked about, which is the hub, you know, mm-hmm.
to aggregate the social all your media stuff. Footprint and the, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also going to reach out to Joseph Reuter about his product, because I like what he's done. I mean, it's a really interesting thing to be able to essentially allow people to take a tour of all your social media spots. Mm-hmm. I really like that premise. So
Extender.
Extender. Yes. Okay. Thank you. So it should be a great event. Hey, can I tell you guys a quick story? Is that all right?
Do we have a choice?
Well, we should probably say that when social media breakfast is for people that don't know. Well, I sold out though, right? So you really can't.
Well, it's next Friday at the law school.
Yeah.
Shoot, Steve.
Okay, so here's the story. My older sister calls me yesterday and we're chatting, and she was saying, what do you guys, well, we're talking about Father's Day for my dad, but... then she was talking about how she really wanted to figure out how to cut her costs on her phone bill. I said, oh, really? So tell me what you've got. She said, well, I've got Quest right now, and I with tax, I'm paying $53 a month. I said, for what? And she, well, I've got this and I've got that, and I have the caller ID, and I, you know, yada, 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 and she's paying $53 a month. Well, she already has Comcast internet. She has Comcast cable TV. And with those two, she was paying about $140 a month. Well, here's the punchline. I Skype conference called Comcast with her. She's going with the Comcast triple play because they can come and they can wire up the phone directly into her current wiring in the house so all the phones work. And here's the punchline. She's essentially getting the telephony for free. So she's going to pay the same. And even when the price goes up next year, it'll be $5 more than she's paying now for just cable TV and internet. And she's going to save $85 a month on telephony. And then she cut a little bit out of her cable bill. That's stuff that she doesn't use. And so I've been talking to so many different people that have all of these little incremental things, either in their business or at home, where you add them all up and all of a sudden you realize, my God, there's another couple hundred bucks or there's $300 a month you could just carve out of your fixed costs because the choices are there. Are you guys finding any of that?
Yeah, we're on charter here. So they, you know, they've had the same kinds of things. And I find myself calling them up, you know, at least once a year and figuring out what the best way to bundle to save money is.
Yeah, I basically do that as well. You know, you try to move from one great deal to the next.
Yeah. Right. So they're, you know, what's kind of funny is that I'm sure they're doing this because most people just, you know, they get the deal, they save all the money, they're really happy. And then, you know, they don't notice when the bill goes up a year later or 6 months later or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I do. I see the bill and it's, you know, it's $85 or whatever. And then it goes to 140. I'm like, okay, what happened? And you look at it and you know, say, okay, well, they changed it. And then you call them up. But they're happy to make the change. So it's kind of an interesting way to sell services. I wish that they would get to a place where it was sort of, you know, almost like the cell phone plans where they don't change that much.
Yeah.
You know, I could get into a plan that meets my needs and it's, you know, economical and gives me all the services that I'm looking for. But yep. Well, what's funny about the whole telephony piece is my parents, they're on Time Warner out in California, and they've switched over at both their houses to the off the regular landline to the cable TV delivered phone service. And, you know, they'd be the last people that I would think would actually go off of the standard phone service, and they had no trouble doing it because they said, hey, that the call quality is actually better and it's a lot cheaper. So why wouldn't I do it? And I was kind of surprised when they said they were actually switching both houses to it. So.
And there's phone number portability. So my sister's going to keep her number.
Yep.
And that was the big thing for her was she didn't want to lose the number.
Did you want to pass that number along, Steve, or
no?
I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I know we're running out of time and I wanted to begin. Tomorrow is Father's Day. Top five Father's Day gifts.
From
Innovate. Top five Father's Day gifts. What do you think?
The Kindle 2.
The Kindle 2?
So if my kids are listening, Kindle 2. I'd take Kindle the DX, 2? but I don't really need the Kindle DX, you know.
Okay.
But the Kindle 2 would be great. So that'd be number five on my list.
How old are your kids, Tim?
20 and 16, almost.
Well,
17.
They could actually maybe go out and buy that. I'm dealing with a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get a Kindle.
Well, for me, it's the OtterBox iPhone case, and I'll put a link in the show notes.
So why that one, Steve?
Why that one? Because it's this substantial rubber case that you can also put a belt clip on. And I drop mine enough. I've got a leather case on it, but I'm kind of getting weary of the leather case. And I saw this guy at the AT&T store that I walked by, and I just walked in to see if they had any interesting cases. And I go, hey, where'd you get that one? And he goes, oh, you can only get it online. It's OtterBox. And I thought, oh, my God, I'd love to have that case. So that's what I asked for. So hopefully I'll get it.
Okay, so there's two.
There's two.
iPhone 3GS.
iPhone 3GS. Although, you know, for older dads, it's maybe a little challenging. I show this one, my dad's 83, and I show this one to my dad, and he looks at it and says, how the hell do you see all that?
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I don't have any problem with it. But so it depends on how old the dad is. But what I did is I ended up replacing my dad's PC with a Mac Mini and an LCD panel 2 years ago. And I went from three or four personal visits a quarter to fix his PC down to about two a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing he just never breaks it. He never futzes with it. He doesn't get malware and spyware or anything. And it's radically dropped my personal tech support.
Okay, so there's so a Mac Mini. Would you consider that a great gift idea?
Yeah, probably if a bunch of kids went together and got it for their dad, that might make sense.
Might be a good one. Okay, that just leaves just one left. Anybody want to throw one out there?
It's got to be a netbook. So ooh, I don't know. Yeah. Could be a Dell Mini 10. Could be an MSI Wind. You know, you pick it. But a netbook running, you know, like Windows 7, I think would be good, or Ubuntu.
That's a great choice. That's a great gift.
Yeah.
And no ties. You guys didn't come up with a tie.
Oh, well, we're kind of tech guys, so you know, we don't wear ties anymore.
That's true.
You know, literally, in the jobs that I had, I didn't wear a tie from about 1997 on.
Well, you know, if you really need to get something for the you know, the tech guy, you get him a new navy blue jacket and a pair of jeans, because that's pretty much the uniform.
Yeah, that you wear. Exactly. Now we're gonna miss next week.
Okay.
And it's 4th of July, right? No. Is it?
No.
No, it's that's the weekend after.
You're gonna be basking in the afterglow of your presentation at social media.
Yeah, well, we understand. I go on these dad and son adventures with my son every year, and this year we're going to Chicago. And believe it or not, the driver for us to go to Chicago, the reason we're going to Chicago, is Cory Doctorow's book, Little Brother, which is, you know, is on the New York Times bestseller list. My son got it, read it, loved it, gave it to me. I read it, thought it was phenomenal. And they're doing a play of it in Chicago, and Corey's going down for it. Not this, he's already been there, but my son is just, he's a major geek. But he's actually emailed Corey and told him how much he loved his book. And for those who don't know who Cory Doctorow is, he's an author, science fiction author. He was one of the founders of the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco. The guy's just, you know, he's been all over the place for
Uber blogger.
Absolutely. Yep. At Boing Boing. Yep.
Have you read Crap Hound?
No, I haven't yet.
It's great. You should read it, or you should, there's an open source, like podcast version of it. That's actually quite good. Audio version.
Oh, well, because I've got Stanza on my iPhone, and I've got Crap Hound on there, but I haven't, it's just, I don't read on my iPhone, I'm sorry.
Yeah, someone did an open source, whatever, Creative Commons audiobook, and different than most of those audiobooks, like what you get at LibriVox, where you've got like 49 different people reading it.
Yeah.
It's one woman reading it, and she does a great job, and you could, you know, cut the lawn and listen to the thing. It's fairly short. It's his first book, and it's really funny.
I'll do that. Absolutely.
It's like an interplanetary garage sale guy in Canada. So it's really kind of funny.
Great.
They go searching garage sales, and they talk about the code of the garage sale people. So it's a good book. And then the other one is Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, which is, I'm in the middle of actually right now.
Really? Yeah, I have that one too. So
yep.
I'll have to, which I haven't read yet. See, that's the problem, is that I don't know about you, but I much prefer audiobooks, because I can just listen to them when I can get to them.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't make the same impact, because every once in a while I'm multitasking or something else is going on and I just miss things. But all right. Well, let's wrap it up. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Good talking to
you. Have a good week. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
You know,
sounds good.
Bye.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.